Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
The world is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
How about that? Do you really think we can? That's pretty cool. Who is that, Gunner? Who's that guy singing?
Man, who is that guy? I think it's John Fisher. It's you.
It's me.
It's you. Well, coming, you sound great.
Coming to you from Laguna Beach,
yes.
The Catch on Blog Talk Radio with your host, John Fisher, and a very special guest tonight. We're just excited about the way things are going here, the way things are getting started, and I got to get, you know what, I got my computer on here, and it's coming back at me, so I'm going to have to turn it down. There we go.
That's kind of a psychedelic
kind
of a thing, isn't it, John? Very psychedelic.
We're still new at this, folks, but... You know, we get a little bit better each time. And tonight we have actually a really good friend of mine and actually a former manager of my part of my musical career at the time when I was doing recording and everything. A guy that's got just incredible stories to tell and a wonderful way to talk about the Lord. So you're going to enjoy him. But, you know, first... Gunner, I want to tell everybody, we like to take the first part of our show to just talk about something current. And, you know, I saw a new book by Oz Guinness.
Okay.
You know who Oz Guinness is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think Oz Guinness is probably one of the most intellectually brilliant Christians alive. That's what I would say.
Yes.
Yeah, and I always like... be around people who are way smarter than I am and who still believe, you know, because sometimes a credible brain can keep you away from knowing God. And then you run into people like C.S. Lewis and Blaise Pascal and Oz Guinness. I put all those guys in the same camp. Frank Schaeffer, you know, and this book is unbelievable. You know what the title of this book is, and I saw it and I ordered it right away, The Global Public Square. The Global Public Square, and the subtitle is Religious Freedom and the Making of a World Safe for Diversity.
Hmm.
What he's doing here, Gunner, is, and Marty's here too. Marty, by the way, is going to be in the chat room all night, so... you know, if you want to chat, you want to send a question in, please do that. Gunner, you want to tell folks how to do that, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. We just got Marty on here. Hey, Marty, how are you?
I'm just great. Standing by for some calls.
She's in the chat room. Our Blog Talk Radio page right now, and you scroll down below our piece there where you can hit play and listen to us. There's some recommended shows. And just below that, if you keep scrolling, you're going to see the chat room, and you can enter there. It's pretty easy to sign up. You can sign up through Facebook. And looks like, Marty, you're over there in the chat room. You've got a few other folks that are in there right now. We're excited to have you in there, Marty. How's it feel in the chat room right now?
Well, it's getting a little bit more better. It was lonely for a while, but now some people are joining me, so it's better. So invite other people to come on board, okay? So I can
talk absolutely.
With
them. So if you're there, go join Marty. She's going to be hanging out throughout the entire show, John. And probably if you listen to last week's show, John, I think she's mastered how to chat and whisper at the same time.
What are you talking about? You know I can't whisper. I can't. Gunner, you whisper. Let me hear you whisper.
Hello, how are you?
I haven't gotten her that book yet.
That's right. You've got to listen to the last show with Rick Johnson to find out what we're talking about. And if you do, you should let Marty know.
Right.
But Oz Giznick, John, I find it interesting. You know what, real quickly, what his Twitter bio says? He says, he's an author and social critic, great-great-grandson of Arthur Guinness, the Dublin brewer, and Oz has written and edited 30 books.
How about that?
I had no idea.
Yep. He knows his beer, too. How about that? Well, here we go. What Oz has done in this book is attempted something that he's probably the only guy who would even try this. He's addressing the whole world in this book.
Hmm.
And what is offered here, he says, is an exploration of an indispensable key to the future and one that sets out a proposal for a constructive way forward for humankind. Okay? How many books have you read that just going to set out a constructive way for the entire world to follow? Okay?
That's huge.
And here it is in three points. First, a vision of soul freedom for all, the foundational freedom of thought, conscience, religion, and belief that reflects, promotes, and protects the inviolable and inalienable dignity and worth of all human beings. Second, a proposal for cultivating civility and constructing a global public square that maximizes soul freedom for people of all faiths and none. I love that phrase. He uses it all the time. All faiths and none. And shows how such a vision can do justice to the integrity of diverse truth claims while also guaranteeing freedom and building stability. And then third, to support these two goals, a global charter of conscience that reaffirms Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and sets out its significance for establishing and protecting soul freedom in the world of today. That's a pretty mighty mouthful and a pretty big chunk to bite off for a book.
What strikes you about that, John?
Well, you know what I like? I like the fact that 30 years now where the Christian voice has been all about let's get America back to where it started and, get America back to God has been our big theme, and that it's turned political and it's made enemies of people. And we lost track, I think, of what the founding fathers really tried to form, and that wasn't a Christian nation. They formed a nation where you could believe anything you wanted to, and you had the freedom to believe it and to write about it and to talk about it and to debate about it. And I think that's what Oz is saying here. He's bringing that vision of freedom of thought and dialogue to a world that's so polarized that we have religious wars going on in our world right now. And what he's trying to do is bring a place of civility and where people can come together and talk, and he's going to set the groundwork for that. And I just think it's fabulous that a Christian is doing that. It isn't, a secularist. It's a Christian who's doing this.
Yeah, and, what strikes me in that, I love the two comments you're talking about, but one specifically is soul freedom. And I know that's something that we're going to be talking probably later. You're going to be talking with our guest today, talking about, the soul and such. But, what is it about that soul freedom? What is that speaking to you?
To me, it says it's the freedom of the freedom to pursue that inner voice, freedom to be that it has dignity, it has worth, and it also opens up that place where we all come to God, and he's what he's basically doing, as a Christian, he's just opening up the door for dialogue and for people to seek the truth.
Yeah.
In an open field.
Yeah.
That's what
he's doing. That's a huge vision he's laying out, too, a charter. You're talking about taking on a huge
isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so again, maybe read the name. What's the name of the title for those that are wanting to maybe check out this book and read it along with you if you're reading it right now? What's the name of the book again?
Name of the book is Oz Guinness, is the author, and Gunnar. Wouldn't it be great if we had him on the show sometime? I think we can do that.
I think there's a thousand reasons that we need to have him on the show. We put it that way.
Yeah, I think so. And the title of his book is The Global Public Square, where religious freedom and the making of a world safe for diversity. And it's really a perfect tie-in to, because our guest that we have tonight is talks a lot about the soul, and we're gonna get him going on that in just a minute after I introduce him. And I just have to be careful because it could take me the whole rest of the hour to introduce him, because he's just such a great brother, and he's done so many things, and he's so unique as a Christian. I think, you know, for years I have said the world doesn't need Christian music. The world needs Christians making music.
Mm.
And our next guest is a guy who has fostered artists and venues and people who support this whole activity of Christians making music, making great music. And he has worked with some of the greatest. He's worked with T-Bone Burnett, Michael Bean of The Call, the late Michael Bean. Remember The Call, Gunnar? Remember The Walls? The Walls came down, 83?
I listen to them probably every week. I love it.
Yeah. The 80s, they were really the group for the 80s. I still believe 86.
Oh,
and two lines from that song, Gunnar, two of the greatest lines. For people like us in places like this, we need all the hope that we can get. I can hardly say it. It breaks me up, you know? Because
those guys
screamed it. For people like us in places like this, we need all the hope that we can get. You know, I'm just so glad, you know, there was a Christian out there in the world screaming that in his music.
That's right.
And he did it well, you know. Oh. And then there's Bruce Coburn, and, you know, one of the greatest Canadian artists ever. And
the Canadian boss.
Vigilantes of Love.
Bill Melody.
And then, of course, he's been with U2. And he toured with U2. And here's a little nice side bit. Yes, it's so great.
Side bit.
In 1992, in a open date of the Zoo TV tour, Dan and Allison Russell were married in Howth, Ireland, with Larry Edge and Bono attending.
They were the guests.
How's
they were
that?
The only. I think.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, get your smelling salt out. That's huge. I just passed out the first time you told me that one.
And Allison, she's the love of his life. She worked with him when I was with him back in the 80s. They were working together. They weren't married. And she was just the faithful lover of Dan for so many years. And he was just off running and doing all these things. And he finally settled down and married her. You know, it was it's a great story. I wish I had time for that. Oh, and then there's Dan's parents, the greatest parents in the world, Otis and Glynis Russell.
Oh, wow.
Don't you love their names? The names
awesome.
Say everything. The names say everything. Otis and Glynis, they're still hanging in there, just beautiful, warm-hearted, hospitable people. They welcome everybody and anybody, doesn't matter who you are. And they taught Dan to do that, and I think that's why he's such an open-minded person, such a great Christian. You know, I could go on and on, but that's stupid when we got him on the phone. So, everybody, Dan, everybody.
My goodness. I don't know what to say other than I have 10 minutes to correct most of that stuff. Anyway, hello.
Yeah,
it's great to be here. Good to hear your voice, John. Marty, hello, Marty.
Hello, Dan. I love hearing your voice. I miss you.
Well, likewise. And good to meet you, Gunnar.
Great to meet you.
Oh, and
you.
I didn't—I forgot you're in my one of our favorite places in New England. And he does all this traveling all around the world, but always comes home to New England, Merrimack Valley, Newburyport. He just loves that. Grew up there, and he's still is a New England kind of guy. Dan, you've worked with so many artists over the years. What do you look for in an artist that you would be proud to represent?
Their tolerance of me. well, you know, actually, I kind of sort of bump into opportunities, or they just, you know, they just happen. It's not a strategic plan. It's never been a strategic plan. I suppose if I had some requirements, I'd have to really love the music for personal reasons. It has to feed me personally, and then when you meet the people, you know, you feel a real kinship with them. And music aside, you just get along with them, and you know, if you never did anything with them, you'd still be, you know, good friends with them. And whenever they came to town, you'd always sneak away before soundcheck or after soundcheck and take them to a cool little, you know, cafe and just catch up with them, that sort of thing. But, you know, and if I feel that their music is compelling for me, and I sort of automatically, sometimes unfortunately, want to tell the world about it, and I go off and spend the next several years doing that. Because I think great art should be heard by people, because it's sort of an ointment to a lot of the wounds that seem to be chronic. And, you know, again, and it's just my opinion, you know, on the artists that I get behind. And because it's fueled by love, I can go a lot further than if it's fueled by a paycheck. And I've been very fortunate to have, you know, that love thing be the primary reason why I'm working on a project at any particular time, in any capacity.
Wow. Yeah. You know, that's beautiful. You are currently managing, among others, I know you have more than just one, but probably the one I think of, and I saw you guys on tour, at least when you were down in San Diego last spring, the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, the son of Michael Beam, Robert Beam, is one of the three members of this group. I can't believe that three guys can turn out as much powerful music as they do. Where did that name come from, and what do you like about them? What do you like about the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club?
Well said, John. Well, first of all, I'm actually, this is kind of breaking news, I'm actually finishing up 15 years of working with them as their manager.
Wow.
And friend, and I'm going to continue on as their friend, but being bi-coastal in L.A. A lot, it's time for them to have an on-the-ground, full-time L.A. manager. And I'm, you know, New England is Boston, New York. That's my place. Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, they pulled that name from a Marlon Brando movie called The Wild Ones, a 1956 movie. And the storyline there were two motorcycle gangs, and Marlon Brando headed up the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club gang, and the Beatles was the name of the other gang. And these guys grabbed that name, and it's Peter, Robert, and Leah. Leah's from Denmark. And they're now currently, I think, in New Zealand today, and they're headed to Japan, then China, then Indonesia, and I think they wind up in Vietnam at the end of this run that started in late February.
Wow.
About 150 shows in 30 countries, 35 countries.
Yeah. Have you traveled to any of these places with them? Two set times in their career?
Yeah. I normally I would go to the bigger cities because it's important for me to connect with any of the industry that's there, whether it's you know, Paris or London or Berlin or you know, wherever it makes sense to go. I mean, if I were to go out on the road with them, it would be just to hang with them and be with them for a short season. But I used to tour manage and road manage and do all that kind of stuff. And I like to go out a couple days ahead of them, stay in Paris a few days after them, and just ponder the lyric a little bit at a cafe. That's my style now.
Yeah. What moves you about these guys?
Well, they're very visceral. They're very honest. I mean, great art to me doesn't pull any punches. And great art for me is there's a lot about the timing of it too. Pop culture kind of is very calculated with its art and wants to make sure that it says what you want to hear and says what the majority of the people will nod and sway to. And these guys are not posers. They don't look a certain way for a certain kind of response. They're kind of they're beautiful people. They may come across as socially awkward because they don't know how to look at the camera and say the right things. So they're very vulnerable in their music. They got a great sort of natural rock and roll blues bass swagger to it. It just connected with me. And it connected with me from the very beginning when Michael called me up and said his son is going into another band and he wanted to be involved. And I responded to Michael, who I'd been working with and managing for years, responded with saying, I'm not moving to L.A. As long as we get somebody out there in L.A. to be my day-to-day guy, you know, I'll come out, you know, once a month maybe, but, you know. I love those guys. Always will. But if you get to see them, it's quite a concert. Great music.
Yeah.
The new record,
yeah,
by the way, is called Spectre at the Feast. That's their new album title.
What is that again?
Their new album is called Spectre at the Feast.
Spectre at
meaning
the feast.
Like a spectre, yeah, at the feast is like a ghost that's disturbing the feast,
yeah,
upsetting things and creating,
wow,
a havoc at the feast with just the gathering.
Oh, wow. That's intriguing. That's definitely intriguing. Well,
the chat room is wild. Dan, you're their hero, first and foremost, and they're so glad you're on. And then everyone seems to know about Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and think that it's very, very cool that you've been associated with it. But mostly, they're talking about Mark Hurd, and they are remarking specifically to the song that you recorded, I Just Wanna Get Warm, on the song Hand of Love, a tribute to Mark. Is there anything you want to chat from that, bounce off from that? I'm so sorry, John, for interrupting, but they're just so...
No, it's great.
There's so much activity going on. Dan,
yeah,
you know... You're my hero always, but you're many other people's heroes.
Well, yeah. I just want to be my kids' heroes if I can get a chance. Maybe they'll remember my number and write me once in a while as soon as they move out. But, Strong Hand of Love was a tribute to a very close friend. I called him my best friend. We were best friends back when he was alive. He died, I think, when he was 40 in 1992. We had a lot of dreams together, and like with Michael Bean, who then became my next best friend who died. By the way, don't become my best friend. Your help.
I was worried about that.
We had a lot of ideas and dreams together, but when he passed away suddenly, and I've been working with him. He had a little studio in Montrose, and he's an amazing singer-songwriter, a very talented musician, great lyricist, kind of lyricist that Bruce Coburn would look at and say, and did say that this is better than Dylan for him. He finally found somebody, that tribute record happened as a result of Mark passing and his wife and daughter, and they needed some money. Mark was another artist like Michael Bean, who is sort of had a cult following, or had a small group following, wasn't a pop artist. You wanted the world to hear this stuff because it would raise the bar so much and open people's eyes to such great depth if they could. And so I put together a tribute record. I put the call to some friends, and we had about 45 artists send in music. I was in Toronto working on another project during this time period. I don't know exactly what happened because there's so many things go on. We had. Got done with the session really early, and I had some kind of a deal with the musicians that we had to do two songs a day. Otherwise, and if they did, I would buy them lunch and a movie or something like that at night, dinner and a movie. And we got done real quick, they're going to walk out of a studio that was locked out. And I said, you can't do that. I get 6 hours of paid time. So we ended up just throwing this song up. They said, what else do I have going on? I said, this tribute record, I'm gathering together some friends and trying to pay tribute to Mark Hurd. And said, well, you do a song. It was suggested, so I came up with this one song. I stood there in the circle with the musicians, and I strummed it, and they all kind of looked at me like cocky, great musicians can sometimes look at you, and they did it, and I think we did it in two takes, and I comped two vocals, and then they looked at me within 30 minutes later and said, that song was another one of Mark's great songs, and I'm glad I got to participate at that level on this particular project. I usually don't do that type of thing. I usually work behind the curtain. And we had it released through Mer Records and I think Epic Records. It was a good time many, many lives ago, it seems.
Yeah.
That record
brings tears to my eyes just even hearing you talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to steel myself to that because Michael Bean's the next chapter. I'm just finishing up a project with him now where the call got back together and with special guest, his son, Robert Lebon Bean.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They played at Slim's and the Troubadour, and we filmed it and recorded it, and we're aiming at hopefully getting the audio done and out before the holidays, and then the video with the finished video out first of the year. But I had to bite my lip through a lot of that because it's just you know, the shocker when somebody who's Michael was a mentor to my son, and you know we used to vacation together, we all kinds of plans together, and then at age 60, he just passed away suddenly, unexpectedly. We just got to look at his art, look at his music, and celebrate his life and move forward.
Yeah, these people, we can thank God for the amount of material that they put out. I remember, didn't it seem like Mark just had a real flow of songs in the last two before he passed away and never knew he was going to?
Yeah,
is that right?
He was prolific, and we did three records pretty quickly, Dry Bones Dance, Secondhand, and Satellite Sky, and they were all just a series of demos, and I was pitching demos around to record companies, and a couple of them that were actually calling me back and saying, okay, you know, let's talk about Mark, when Mark passed, and he would put the records out. We'd put the records out ourselves on this label that Mark and a friend of ours, Chuck, and I put together sell 5 or 10,000 copies just to kind of pay for the cost of recording.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Dan, you assigned, you got Mark to be producer for my album, Wide Angle. And so I got to spend some really quality time with him in his little studio in the garage in his house. And I remember how we did that. I mean, we just he was always for the integrity of the artist. Mm-hmm. And so he had me play my songs the way they just are, the way I do them by myself with my guitar. And we recorded with a click track, and then we went in the studio and added bass drums and everything to it. And then we went back into his garage, and Mark played everything else.
Yeah.
You know, he could pick up anything and just play it.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people were upset at Mark because, I mean, he'd pick up the violin and play a violin part or play a keyboard. If he had a harp in front of him. He's pre-digital, so this is
that's
back
amazing.
In the day of tape. And so in order, you can't really, you got to perform it. You got to really nail the part. You can't, you know, pitch shift it and move the good part several times along, you know, fake it. So Mark was really gifted, really gifted.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
I remember being very, very humbled and very, very, wow, whenever, when we encountered him, at least when I was with him with you guys, and he came across something which was really not that terribly wow, but he was all wow, and we all tried to look at it from his perspective, and then we would all go, you want to know what? Wow. Is this really perspective? Pretty amazing.
He was a really, really sweet, really sweet man. He was just, you know, he's the only guy that ever called me Booby. That's what he would call
Booby.
And we, Michael, Mark, and I would get on the phone probably 4 or 5 times a week, and for about a half hour, we'd one-up each other with the latest jokes or a regurgitation of jokes. It was like flexing our muscles. We get on and just, we'd be laughing out of control. And that, Michael Biehn was actually a great comedian. He went to high school in Chicago,
right.
And his best friend was John Belushi. And that's how Michael started in his
wow.
sort of high school career. Art music. But so there's been, cool. there's been a few records and a few shows.
Yeah. Well, and Dan, while we're talking about, tell our listeners, talk just a little bit about the role of music in our lives. I just know that you have something to say on things like this because you don't just work next to things. You let things get down inside you, and you have reasons for things you do. So tell us, how important is music in our lives?
I wish music was more important in other people's lives, but, I guess when the Red Sox are going for the World Series, I guess I can set music aside for a couple of weeks. But there's NASCAR, the sports, and there's some music in there for most people. But I think music's a superpower. I think when it's done right, it has this amazing, get out of the way from power. It can speak to people 50 years from now on the other side of the world. It kind of speaks to our aloneness, and it sort of takes away that sense of I'm all alone in the world. It brings, the fog into it brings you out of the fog and into the clearing. And it helps you either articulate something you couldn't figure out, or it helps you become settled with something that remains ambiguous, or grieving, or celebrating. It's a very, very powerful thing. That's what it's done to me, and I couldn't imagine life without music. When I see great music, it just blows my mind. The other night, Gary Clark Jr., who's this blues-based artist, he's out of New York now, but he just blew my mind. I was seeing Jimi Hendrix, live in front of me or something. It was just only all blues, not psychedelic. Just blew my mind. Or Ben Harper, or Robert. I saw Robert Plant and Buddy Miller a while back, and I can go without sleep for a couple of days and think I'm going to die on the way home from a show. But if it's a show like that, I can stay up for another couple of days.
Dan. And if a person is maybe not a Christian, can their music still come from God, do you think?
Only if you think God is omnipresent and omniscient.
I do.
Only if you think God
I
is
do.
God. So I don't, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I'm sort of a different type of Christian maybe than at least with the way I was raised. I was raised in an evangelical family, and I was told at a very young age that I was a sinner and I was going to hell, and I wasn't really quite sure what I had done wrong. And I was still told by people of authority that I was going to die and go to hell. I'm in recovery, and I'm doing much better from that. But I sort of feel that what matters most in life is, does God believe in me? And does God believe in my daughter and my son and my wife and my friends? And my answer to that is, I hope so. And if he doesn't, what difference does it make then? What difference does it make if you run around saying, I believe in God, if God doesn't exist, or believe in you? And I think sometimes our insecurity translates into us jumping up and down and waving our arms and saying, I believe, I believe, I believe. And it's just because we're not really sure if we're believed in. We're still dealing with that low self-esteem or that self, we're not feeling worthy. But I believe that no matter what, God's love will prevail. And I don't qualify it in a religious sense. I'm not nervous about God losing an election, and I surely don't think God needs me to help him win it, or he has low self-esteem and he needs me to kind of lift him up because he feels a little down today. I think my track is I'd rather be a victim of his affection and be honest about that than say that I deserve something and and have to lie to maintain that facade.
Wow.
So.
Everybody get that? Oh, my. And, you know, it's you use soul probably more than anybody I know. Inside Out Soul Fest is the Christian event that you have put on for 18 years, is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, it's 17th year coming up this year. It feels like 30,
okay.
Though. Just like 30 years.
Yeah, But, you know, you're fascinating. I love the use of that term, but no one else is using it. Why do you like soul so much, and what does it mean to you?
Well, some folks think it's about soul music, and I think, like, oh, man, I love soul music. I mean, whether it's Marvin Gaye or Al Green or Otis Redding, I like any of that stuff. But this event, you know, it's not intended to make Christianity into an adjective, but the objective of this event is to attract Catholics and Protestants primarily. Anybody can come.
Mm-hmm.
But those people that believe that they have a soul and they are under that umbrella or impression that, you know, they're Christian and they live by those mandates and theological ideas. And I found a long time ago that most of us don't really have a rapport with our own soul. We kind of have a vague relationship with it. It's kind of an abstract thing that we don't really drill down on. But if you ask yourself, do I believe I have a soul? You say, yes, I do. And is this going to transcend after I die and, you know, and go on somehow, somewhere? And you'd say, yes, it is. And then my response is, well, why aren't I spending more time trying to develop a rapport with my soul? Most of us, first thing in the morning without even knowing it, we turn to our soul and say, shut up, keep your head down, I'm going to get us through the day. And our soul probably only has a few minutes during the night in our deep sleep to kind of stretch out within us. But a soul-connected person is somebody that is beside himself in that he's not looking at every step and wondering whether he's making the right one or the wrong one. When your soul connected, I believe you know that eternity is beyond this moment right here, and the consequence of eternity is hopefully hanging in the balance of love, and it's going to be all right. So you look at your moments with more freedom, and you look at strangers with differently. You look at your family differently. Different value system when you're a soul connected person. You know, when someone waits on you at a restaurant and they're not soul connected, they make a good meal taste bad. But you know, when a soul connected person serves you food at an average restaurant, you somehow think, hey, I'm coming back here. You know,
wow.
So that's kind of what happens when you connect on a deep level with yourself and you quiet down, you listen. And you give room for your soul to become the dominant indicator of where you should go and what you should do and who you should be with and how you should respond. The soul doesn't operate in a rushed manner because it's eternal. How do you rush eternity?
Yeah.
That Soul Fest really is trying to bring a conscious awareness to the folks that attend, you know, live from the inside out as a soul-connected, risk-taking believer and true love. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, the paradigm shifts from the fear paradigm to the love paradigm. And if you can imagine a community of people, and I'm not qualifying as Christians or religious people, but if you can imagine a community of people who are living from the inside out as soul-connected, risk-taking believers and true love. That's quite a community. They probably won't need.
I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to be a part of that.
We all are part of that. We just need to, confess it and live it. But that's
well, Dan, we're getting pretty close on our time here. You know, you told me a story when I saw you in San Diego at the House of Blues. about your daughter. It seems like every conversation I've had with you since, you tell me the story again. I'm serious. It means a lot to you, and it's a wonderful story. And it kind of, I think, it must summarize a lot of things that you would want to say. So I want to be sure I give you a chance to tell everybody who's listening that story about you and your daughter.
Okay. Well, I tell it to you a lot because at the House of Blues, Black Rebel was on stage, and we had to scream at each other to say hello. But I took my daughter out when she was just turned 13. It's, you know, father-daughter thing, dip for dinner, and I said, darling, you know, you're a teenager. You need to start pulling away. You're going to start pulling away from it. You're going to start having your opposite views of what I have. And so I told her right away I was Republican. So you're going to, that's just the way it goes. And I just want you to know that I'm going to love you no matter what. It doesn't matter to me. There's going to be consequences for choices you make in life, but I'm going to love you anyways. And I'm going to always be here for you. And after a pause, I said to her, sort of opening up the opportunity for her to confess something, because, you know, as parents, we still want to know what they're not telling us. I said, baby, you want to say anything to me now about something that you might be otherwise nervous to say to me? And she thought for a few minutes, and then she said, yeah, I don't believe in God, at least not like you. Yeah. And I said, oh, okay, well, why is that? She said, well, gosh, I don't know. I don't know why I don't, because of you, because of mom, because of my brother, because of school, because of whatever. I don't know. I said, okay. And about an hour later, 45 minutes later, she asked me why I wasn't upset with her for saying that. and I said, for not believing it, and why I wasn't upset with you. I said, honey, why would I be upset with you about you believing or not believing in God, because I believe God believes in you, and that's all that really matters. And if he doesn't believe in you, then I'm on your side. So that's why I'm not anxious. And that's sort of a indicator for me of really what it comes down to in my faith journey is just learning to stop earning God's attention or trying to get his attention and recognizing that I've always had it, always will have it, as does everyone else. Everyone is special, and they're, you know, God's love will prevail. It's everywhere. Either it is or it isn't. And if, as I was saying to a friend earlier today, either God's love is unconditional, or if there's one condition in it, then throw it all out. What transforms us? Our self-discipline or God's affection?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I surrender.
That's fantastic. We have time for one more, and this is kind of a fun one, so maybe a one to go out on. But the thing that's amazing to me is that you're somebody who's had a foot in both worlds. I mean, you've been in the Christian world in terms of Christian music, churches, you're working with youth directors, you have that whole side, and then you're working with these other artists and out in clubs, and like one night I can see you in a club like House of Blues, and you know, the booze is flowing, high decibel rock music, people dancing and putting the moves on everybody. And the next day, you're dealing with some pastor who thinks the band you brought in to play at the Christian concert is too worldly. I mean, how on earth do you do that?
I don't do it very well, John. I've quit Soulfest probably 5 times formally and 100 times informally. I don't sit well in the context of the quote-unquote Christian culture. I'm not saying that in judgment or to condescend. My mom said, listen, don't condescend to anybody that you want to give your opinion to. If you want to share something with them, do it with respect and lead the way with your own life. I feel much more at home, you know, being in the real world. I don't think it should ever be an adjective. God never needs to be an adjective to anything. I mean, that's
wow.
So as pastors and youth pastors, and it's a tough gig, you know. I mean, it's a job, and it can have its roots in sort of an idealistic, romantic beginning. But you know, a lot of these 20, 30, 40 year veterans have had it just so hard. I think the real work, the real work is with the orphans and the widows and the front line of where the gospel is just brilliant is with the people who are impoverished, not the people who sit around thinking that they're better than the Second Baptist Church, which is not the First Baptist Church. You know, but again,
can I call you on that one? That's great.
So God doesn't need my opinion about any of this stuff. I mean, it doesn't matter anyway. But I'm rather be, at the Troubadour, which is an amazing place to see, and so many amazing concerts. Or when I toured with the Call with Michael, it started with him just saying, "Dan, I need your help for a couple of months here because I don't have a road manager." And I said, "Oh, I'll just give you a couple of months." And 14 months later, I was coming home. But every single night, everywhere we went, to me, that was a sense of the truth being conveyed and freedom emerging from that truth. And
wow.
Awakenings and healing and all these wonderful things that when I go to church, I see a lot of people that are very, very kind of safe, and I don't hear schizophrenia or smell alcohol or see pregnant teenagers. I see a lot of people that are concerned that they're perfect, or at least looking that way. And there's not a lot of, unless it's, of course, a Pentecostal type church, you know, rocks a different way. But I like the clubs. I like the mainstream because I've just had so many visceral experiences where I think, of course, I get born again all the time. So I think I'm getting born again because Robert Plant is singing right now. And, oh, my gosh. God's speaking through me. Ben Harper's on stage and God's speaking. Wow.
Yeah. 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 Dan, fantastic. I know that this is great for everybody. I know that a lot of our listeners are really resonating with you, and I'm just so glad that you took the time to be with us tonight. And thank you. All I can say is thank you, and I look forward to the next time I get to see you again.
Thank
Let
you,
us know
yeah,
when you're out
thank
here, okay?
Yeah. All right, you guys. Be well. Love one another. See you.
Yeah, hey, give our love to Allison, please.
Yes, please.
I will.
Love you.
I will, of course. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow.
Wow, John, how do you close on that one?
I'm just kind of...
brother?
Yeah, isn't that sweet? I just kind of want to sit here and let this rest for a while. I don't want
to... it's more like a mirror in front of you. Talking to a dear friend, but it's the thoughts and reality that you've lived your life with. Dan is articulating more within what we would call the world and the marketplace. This is what you're trying to ask your people that are associated with the catch to jump out in and grasp.
Yes. Yes.
Obviously, Dan and you are best friends. Obviously, you share the same soul. From the chat room, people are jumping up and down from the point of view of who Dan is as a producer and writer and whatnot, and specifically in regard to his the motorcycle group and his last album and Mark Hurd. But all from Mark Hurd, this I came in with Mark Hurd from Mark Hurd all the way through to through you two, through all these people. To where he's at with the motorcycle group, and he's this consistently the same man.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true. Wow.
And so, again, to me, being married to you is many times I want to hang you by your toes. But the one thing I can't is that you've been consistently faithful. You have never not been faithful. You've been a lot of problems. And if anybody wants to know, I'll have my own blog talk radio show. But,
whisper,
you,
Marty, whisper, please.
The one thing I can say, guys, is that from the moment I met him to this moment, it's been almost 40 years. The one thing that has been consistent in John's life is faithfulness. And I believe that that's the same with Dan Russell. And I believe that's the reason why their souls are connecting one with another. They haven't seen each other for years. And yet they're brothers and they're connecting. Why? Why? Because of their faithfulness.
Yeah. Well, Gunnar, any thoughts?
You know, I tell you, it's fun to sit back and listen to this dialogue about artists and things that have influenced my life and influenced my faith over the last several decades. There's three songs came to mind as I was listening to that interview that I want to go listen to that I think for me summed up a lot of what Dan was saying. Number one, of course, I Still Believe, The Call. I want to go listen to that as soon as we're done. Number two, a song by Pierce Pettis, God Believes in You. That just came to mind when he was talking about it. And the third song is a David Wilcox song called Show the Way. And a beautiful song, you know, Love Wins, you know. And I don't know, as I'm listening to this interview, this is going to be one of those episodes, John and Marty, that I'm going to go back to and listen to several times, because there were some statements in there, you know, that really spoke to me. But those are three songs that kind of came to mind that summarized what we talked about, you know, tonight. And as far as, you know, a victim of his affection, I'd rather be a victim of affection. I mean, there's some great stuff in there to dig into. What a great interview. What a great interview.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you know, I want to mention here at the end, Dan, by the way, Dan just texted me an answer to a question I didn't get to ask, that who is he really liking right now? And he mentioned that he was probably not going to be working with Black Motorcycle Group as much, Black Rebel Motorcycles. But he texted me back, Rachel Taylor. Now, I don't know who she is, but I'm going to tell all our listeners, look her up.
Are you kidding, son? Son, she
Rachel.
Is hot. Are you kidding? She is hot.
You know.
She is great.
Marty knows.
Wait a minute.
Oh my
God. Hey, Dan, are you still there, Dan?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
No, I'm here. I'm just trying to get my daughter to settle down and go to sleep.
good luck.
Think Loretta Lynn meets Patsy Cline, produced by David Lynch, and the studio's in Twin Peaks. Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, David Lynch, real great lyrics, beautiful voice, just a great, honest lyric. I can't wait to disappear for about a year and a half in this stuff. This is going to be great.
Fabulous.
Thanks for hanging in there.
I'm going to get off because you guys are talking too much about me, and it's just kind of gossip that makes me really weird.
Dan, before you get off, I love you, and I love your wife even more. I miss you. Thank you so much for tonight.
All right, take care of yourself.
Okay,
bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Gunnar, we are almost out of time here. What about next week? We better talk.
We got a couple minutes there, but I knew Dan was hanging in there, and so I thought, what a great opportunity. I feel bad now. He's trying to put his daughter, you know, down, and I just, you know, feeling awful about that. But, no, great stuff there. You know, next week we've got it's going to be really interesting. We've got Game Church, GameChurch.com. They are doing some pretty amazing things. The gaming industry, we're talking about these games that people are playing on their computers, and everywhere you look, they're playing all kinds of games. And it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Gunnar, we're not talking about Las Vegas, right? When
we're not talking about Las Vegas. No, we're talking about all these different, you know, games where they're, you know, the guns, or they're playing games, or they're, you know, racing cars and all kinds of stuff. We're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry. You know, we're talking about a topic, you know, John and Marty, where I think we're very easy to criticize and start talking about how bad it is on culture, but nobody's talking about, well, what do we do about it? How do we reach out to these folks? Because so many people are playing. It's one of the top industries out there. And so we've got Game Church. They're based out of Ventura, California. They're going to, like, Comic-Con and these gaming shows. And people, they'll come up to their booth. They're like, what are you guys doing here? And they simply are handing them a book, the Book of John, just a physical copy of the Book of John. They look at them and they say, Jesus loves you. Just a simple message. They've given out over 30,000 copies of these things. And they're trying to really – and they're not judging people that are playing games or whatever games they're playing. They're just loving people. They're building relationships. And through those relationships, it earns them the credibility and the ability to talk to them about – Father that loves them. They're not here to preach down to people or whatever. They just want to love as Christ loved. And it's going to be an interesting thing. They've modeled their outreach around, like, elections. They're doing some amazing stuff, reaching, the porn industry. But these guys are really wanting to reach out and make a difference for gamers. And that's not just youth. We're talking people of all ages playing these games. So that's next week. So we're gonna have a lot of fun talking to them and learning about the gaming industry as well and what they're doing. And so we've got that going on. You're continuing. You've got the Daily Catch. You've got the 12 message series on our new relationship with God. That's going well, right? How's that going?
Yeah, going great. We're putting number eight up this week, I think. And
that's going up. That's gonna be happening any day now.
Yeah. It's really fun. 2 Corinthians point. We've got all eight of them up.
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll have that's going on. We'll have that on the site. And, next week, hey, I'm excited. Just a little between the three of us here. Our audience can join in. I get to come and hang out with you guys here the next few days. I can't wait.
That's right. Gunners, you're going to come down here and be with us over the weekend.
Yeah, we're going to do some Kumbaya. We're going to be singing. Maybe we'll
record
it out.
Well, it's
great.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have this. We just got about 2 minutes left here. We're going to have this show's link. We're going to post that on the Daily Catch and everywhere here tonight, tomorrow, so you can go back, tell your friends, listen to it again, and be sure to post a comment. But next week, join us. Marty, you're going to be in the chat room again, right?
Absolutely, of course. And I've had some amazing people with me in this chat room. Really, really hot. Happening people with great questions. They truly were responding to the aspects of what Dan had to say tonight.
Yeah, we need to figure out maybe how we can, Gunnar, how could we maybe make some of that chat stuff available later, too? What do you think?
Yeah.
We have to think about that.
Think Oz Guinness on the show as well, and we'll Guinness and Oz.
Yep.
Oz Guinness. Get that going. On, any words for us, Mark, before we send anybody out?
I'm not here. You're breaking up.
Oh, you got me laughing.
Is that my fault? Maybe it's just me.
No, John. No. It could be. It is, of course, you. If there's anyone we're going to blame anything on, John, it'll be you.
Yeah,
it is me. It is your problem.
All right.
Okay. Mitch, whisper that next time, John. Marty, whisper that on another note. Let's send them out.
Fantastic. Soul freedom.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
World is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow
soul freedom.
Hoping we
Remember.
Can make it better.
Love you.